are now listening to the Soul Trader podcast, music, creativity, and other plans, with your hosts, Simon James Betts and Corey Stewart.
Welcome to the Soul Trader podcast. It is episode number 4.
Yes,
in season 3. Now, if at all during this episode it sounds like there's like a steam train like chugging past in the distance.
Or a helicopter.
Or a helicopter. That's Charlie the studio dog who's come for a visit. Decided to hit the road and come over, and he's settling down underneath the table.
So he's underneath the table. He's chilled. Good boy. Yeah, so there might be some disjointed sort of audio because, you know, he might all of a sudden bark and I'll have to make an edit somewhere, and but we'll see how he goes. I think a bit of panting here and there is okay.
Just understand it's neither of us.
It's neither of us. That's right. We haven't been resurrecting the Simon's sort of OnlyFans fantasy or anything like that. Oh, dear.
But, yes, welcome to episode 4. If you haven't checked out the previous episodes previous seasons or this season, so this season we did a bit of a kind of welcome back, and we've also discussed AI, and we discussed selling off songwriting catalogues, and obviously AI's, you're maybe hearing about it in the news. I heard about it on the news. They're talking about it in the education space and how they can actually incorporate it, because it'll become something that people need to understand how to use it, because it will become, part of our workspace and learning space in the future.
Yeah.
And also at the moment, Getty Images are suing. Which one are they suing? They're suing one of the. I think we spoke about in the AI that sometimes with the image generation, it generates people's signatures.
Yeah.
And
so, would it be Stable Diffusion or Midjourney?
I'm not off the top of my head. I can't remember, but it was replicating the Getty Images logo. There was kind of a giveaway that it had used Getty Images to kind of learn, basically. And they were saying, Getty Images were basically saying, look, it's just not fair. We need to have laws in place or rules in place for how this works. We don't want it to necessarily stop. We just want some sort of
controls.
Yeah.
Put into place, yeah.
AI is something, you can go back and check out that in episode 2. That's something we'll probably be talking about more in the future.
Well, it is the future.
It is.
Whether we like it or not. Yeah. But
whether we talk about it or not, it's the future, yes.
But I think, I'm going to be paraphrasing here. I saw a quote from, I think his name is Gerd Lennard, who's a well-known futurist. And he was talking about technology and AI and, of course, the future, because that's
what he does.
His head is at. That's what he does for a living. But he made an interesting quote, and that was, and I'm paraphrasing here, but he said something, words like AI and technology, is the future, but human ethics will shape it. So, that is where the humanity aspect of all of this technological advance would be heading towards.
Mm.
As long as we have, sort of controls and, ethics in place, and it's not just a free-for-all, progress for progress sake, I think there can be a good marriage between sort of humanity and sort of artificial intelligence, especially when AI is rapidly moving towards, general intelligence, and which, of course, means that it becomes as smart or even smarter than a human being. So that's artificial general intelligence,
and
then there's another level above that. So, so definitely, as things materialize in the press, we'll be on top of it, because that's just the kind of people that we are. And, you know, we'll let you know, especially when it comes into how it might either enhance or disrupt just the notion of creativity as a whole, which I think is a nice segue into sort of what we're going to be talking about today.
Yeah, I was going to say, you can continue. It was exactly what I was thinking. talking of creativity.
Yeah.
And we were, or you were. Yeah, we were going to talk about what is creativity, or what do you think creativity is? I mean,
yeah.
Feel free to take first punt if you like.
Well, I suppose I was thinking about this the other day, sort of because creativity we have mentioned before in previous podcast episodes that creativity doesn't necessarily have to be just involved with the arts. I mean, you can live a life that is spontaneous and playful and creative, sort of, you know, instead of sort of living a life of, you know, absolute routine and absolute sameness. I think creativity is, you know, it's sort of part problem solving, part magic, part sort of play, part sort of letting, getting out of your own way and just making things happen, I suppose. It's a fairly undefinable thing. But one thing that did sort of spur me on about sort of talking about creativity was an interview that I stumbled across on YouTube with Rick Rubin.
Yep.
And he was talking about creativity, and I haven't seen all of it. There's two or three interviews from different organizations. I think he's releasing a book or something like that, or doing something that warrants him talking about the same subject with different outlets. One of the videos is like an hour and a half long, and the other video is about, you know, 2 or 3 hours or something. Well, like that, like pretty intense conversations. But what I notice with Rick Rubin, I mean, I've always been a fan of his, and especially what he did with Hurt by Nine Inch Nails, you know, that Johnny Cash did the cover of. I mean, Rick Rubin was the main force behind that. And, you know, he is very, very eloquent in describing what creativity is, and it's essentially a process. But he also has really firm views about art, the artist, and how it shapes the world, and how important it is to society and civilization as a whole. Now, I know that sounds all very lofty and stuff, but he did say that one of the quotes that I picked up from some of what I had seen so far is that a lot of people look at, he says that a lot of people look at an artist in terms of what their output is, you know, what the end result is, but he sees an artist for the life that they actually lead.
Right.
Because, you know, creativity is a way of life, irrespective of what the outcome is. So you can be an accountant, but you can be creative in your line of work. You know,
hiding money offshore.
Oh, not in that sort of way. I mean, yes, not create. It's probably a bad example, actually. But I mean, I don't know, just the attitude towards your life and your job, and
of course,
and
yeah,
what you dress. And I'm not talking about wearing Looney Tunes ties or anything like that, because that's just downright yuck. But you know, it doesn't matter what you do or who you are or your upbringing or anything. Everyone has an aspect of creativity in them. It's the thing that enables you to focus on something and time disappears. You know, that's probably when you're at your most sort of creative, I suppose. And I suppose I wanted to see if we can define the undefinable today with what is creativity.
Simple challenge.
It is a simple challenge. Simple challenge for us mere mortals. Like, but also too, I mean, you know, I mean, I've got definite views about what creativity is, and I'm sure that you do. And I suppose that would give the listener a little bit more of an idea as to, you know, who we are as artists. And maybe, you know, the listener can think about sort of what elements of their life could benefit from a little bit more, you know, play, daydreaming, you know, sort of getting out of their own way, sort of thinking outside of the box, all of that sort of stuff. Because, I mean,
yeah,
you know, I think we all can benefit from that from time to time.
I guess another thing is also, after you've kind of listened to this conversation, is actually thinking about areas of your life where you are actually creative, even though you may not think you're creative.
Yeah.
I mean, at its basis, I think that the, you know, like the education system kind of breeds a lot of it's kind of, you know, it breeds the creativity out of us. It's a regurgitating answers, you know, because you have to, obviously, to a point.
Sure.
I mean, there is obviously elements of creativity in schooling, but it's not breeding free thinkers.
Yeah.
I also think that people, there would be some people who would see people like ourselves and go, oh, no, they're creative, I'm not.
Yeah.
Because they're looking at, you know, not that we're kind of the most extreme example. I mean, there's probably even more extreme examples that we could talk about.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you're talking about somebody who is effectively creative for a living and has to be, then other people probably look at themselves and think, I'm not creative. Like, that person's creative, but not me. But I think that in almost any aspect of your life, I think that there's a room for, you know, an element of creativity. And I mean, kids are very creative. Like, I always say that there's nothing more in my mind these days. You know, every kid has an iPad, every kid has, you know, a device that they're staring at.
Mm-hmm.
But there's nothing more magical than sitting outside a room where there's kids playing.
Yeah.
And you know that, you know what's in the room.
Yeah.
With them. But you can hear that there's some whole fantasy world going on.
Yeah.
And you know that there's no kind of pirate ships in there.
Yeah.
But they've created that.
That's right.
And so I think we're all kind of born with that. And, you know, kids will dance around at a venue and they're just carefree. And it's like they kind of dance while, like, nobody's watching. And then we get a bit older and we get a bit more self-conscious and, you know, we let it out potentially less as well.
Yeah.
Because of that.
Yeah.
But I think in, like, just thinking of, you know, basic stuff, cooking.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
creating something out of virtually nothing.
Yeah.
You know, you've got raw material, base material, and then all of a sudden something is created out of the sum of its parts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, like, and obviously, you know, some people cook, you know, they've got a recipe, but I mean, my wife is renowned for not being able to follow a recipe. She'll always just kind of add in her own stuff and get a bit creative with it.
Oh, absolutely. And that's why I keep coming over.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. And, you know.
But yeah.
But, you know, the thing is that is, there's creativity there.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And, you know, she'd probably not consider herself, you know, she probably wouldn't consider, I don't know if she'd consider herself a creative person, but she does photography as well. She is.
Yeah.
And she's also a scientist, and in science you have to kind of try to think your way around things and get a little bit creative. Everything has an element of creativity in it. That's kind of my underlying belief. That doesn't,
yeah.
You were talking about it being I think in your introduction you said magical, or, you know, a bit of magic. I think that, you know, there's a little bit of creativity in so many things.
Yes.
You know, there's creativity in the way you decorate your own house.
Yes.
But you're not an interior designer.
That's right.
You're not taking it to an extreme, and you're also not one of those kind of, you know, when you see really radical interior design, you're kind of going, well, this person is really, you know, thinking outside the box. They're going to the extreme.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I mean, I think that, yeah, even the way you put the cushions on your couch or the colours you choose, there's a little bit of creativity in that.
You might
have awful taste, but it is a little bit of creativity.
Well, yeah, I mean, one person's awful taste is another person's, you know, golden sort of look, isn't it, really? I mean,
what you're saying, not everybody wants a golden penthouse.
Oh, no. No, exactly. Not at all.
No,
not at
all. It's horrendous. No,
maybe a penthouse full of gold, but not a golden penthouse.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think John Cleese has either one or a series of videos out about or talks about creativity, and I think the main word that he uses is play.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So kids are naturally creative because they have there's no sort of point of reference in terms of comparisons. You know, they don't tend to, you know, as they, you know, they don't tend to compare too much.
They're not analysing other people.
Not overly analysing or anything like that. It's only when we're older and, you know, that's when it starts to get, you know, sort of kicked out of us a little bit. But it's a matter of looking at the world as if you're a kid again, you know. I mean,
yeah.
The amazing thing about growing up is everything that we've experienced, we've had to have experienced it for the first time sometime. And how amazing would that have been, you know, as like a little Simon sort of walking around, all of a sudden he sees a butterfly or something like that, and he's never seen it before, you know. That's right, you know. What would little Simon do, you know? Hopefully not crush it. And if you did, you probably would have turned out to be a serial killer or something like that. But no, it's just looking at everything with a sense of wonderment, or at the very least, being able to not take the present moment that you're in as seriously as what you normally would.
Yeah.
And it's also a means of increasing the amount of imagination and not being so literal. One of the things that I'm sort of finding with, you know, this whole screen culture that, you know, the generation coming up is experiencing at the moment is that it would be really interesting sort of 10, 15 years down the track to see if, you know, if there's been an effect on just overall imagination in the generation that's growing up now, because everything is so literal and everything is expected to be so literal rather than
you know,
having to think about it and imagine it. And imagination is a big part of creativity. Now, I suppose what that would mean is that creativity will morph into something else, perhaps.
Yeah.
I don't think creativity will ever die. It will probably change, but I don't know if it will change for the better or not if you take the imagination component out.
Yeah. I mean, I reckon it happened a little bit before screens came along.
Yeah.
Probably 2000s, maybe before that. But it was interesting that, you know, toys started becoming very specific. Do you know what I mean? Like, there was just a toy that everything, like Lego used to be like square bricks.
Yeah.
And you kind of made something and you had to kind of
use your imagination. Oh, it was just generic bricks that you would make something.
Now Lego, there's gazillion different shaped things because they want you to be able to make something that looks exactly like the thing.
Yes.
And so they've got every shape imaginable. There was no kind of imagination, a bit like... there was an old quote, I should find it and read it out, but it was about, you know, back in my day, and it was basically saying back in my day, you know, when you played a computer game, it was like 3 pixels and you just had to imagine it was a man, you know,
yeah.
whereas you've got like all this kind of full-on animation stuff.
Yeah.
And toys started going a little bit like that too.
Yes.
You know, you could
Or they had just a specific purpose.
So there was less imagination involved because they were like, this does this.
Yeah.
Yeah, and also like, you know, kids back in the day, you'd like make a, you'd make a kind of a cubby house in your bedroom.
Yeah.
So then the company went, let's make an inflatable one and sell it to people.
Yeah.
So then parents went out and bought an inflatable cubby house that kids could blow up in their room. It's like, so it takes away.
That's right.
That side of the imagination.
You know, sort of when you were, you know, if there's a newborn sort of in the room and you give it, you know, you give it a piece of paper or a toilet roll or something like that, loves it, or a cardboard box or something like that, you know, it seems like the older the child gets, the more definite the toy has to be.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you give them something, they look at it and they'll look at you and say, what's this? What's this used for?
Yeah.
And it's like, well, use your imagination.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, the loss of imagination has been, you know, sort of happening for a little while, I suppose. Neil deGrasse Tyson was talking about, the space, for instance, and, you know, with the Apollo missions, you know, stopping at Apollo 17, they had scheduled Apollo 18, Apollo 19, and Apollo 20. But, you know, there was constraints with money, but also it was the public just lost interest, you know. And that was, as he would say, as Neil deGrasse Tyson would say, the beginning of the end of our, you know, desire to dream, to imagine sort of what the future would be like, because space really filled that. And I think that's starting to come back, but it's coming back in the very functional and literal way rather than, oh, you know, we're just exploring for exploring's sake, and all the possibilities of things, you know. I don't think people want possibilities anymore. They want definites. And it makes people sort of a little bit more risk-averse, I suppose, in their way of looking at the world, because everything is just so neat and literal.
Yeah.
And definable, I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, and there's like a million thoughts going through my head after what you just said. I mean, I'm reading a book at the moment called Stolen Focus, which at some point we'll talk a bit about, it talks a bit about the screen culture. But just thinking about what you're saying there is that, you know, obviously, you know, hundreds of years ago there was still the globe to explore. I know that, you know, we can get to the argument of the fact that there was already people there, but, you know, obviously people from countries didn't know what was there, so they were going off and exploring.
Yeah.
And then within those countries, there was opportunities to explore. And now, and even, you know, 20 years ago, you wanted to find out about a foreign country. You bought, what was the guides you used to buy?
Oh, the Lonely Planet.
Lonely Planet guides, yeah. So you used to buy one of those, and that used to get you kind of excited about going somewhere. Now, any place that you want to go, there is already a million pictures online,
yeah,
on social media. You know, so people see a picture and go, oh, I want to go there. And then they go there to take a picture of themselves in that same spot so they can post it on social media.
Yeah.
And I wonder if, you know, there's part of it has been lost in that sense as well, in the sense that for a lot of people that the unknown is sometimes, I think, where the excitement is.
Yeah.
And in the world, you know, some people just enjoy the travelling. They want to go there and see it all for themselves and be in that environment. It's a little bit different. But for some people, it's just when it's like, oh, well, I kind of know what's there already, you know, so it maybe changes the dynamic slightly.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that the interesting thing with reading this book is I've been using my phone a lot less. I had already been doing it before I started reading the book because, you know, just been aware of, you know, the distraction, the fact that, so with the screens is effectively, you know, we used to have downtime where we weren't doing something, where we would just be sitting there. So you go to have an appointment at the doctor,
Mm-hmm.
And they keep you waiting for 45 minutes or however long it is.
Yeah.
So you'd sit there for 45 minutes and you might read a magazine maybe, or you might just sit there and ponder.
Yeah.
If you're on the bus, you know, same. Now, whenever you're in those situations, you rock up at a restaurant, you're waiting for a friend to turn up. What do you do? I guarantee
on your phone.
I would say 99% of people, probably more, 99.9% of people will get their phone out.
Yeah.
Instead of just sitting there and just taking in your surroundings and just letting your mind kind of wander. And I've been doing more of that, and like I've been going for walks where suddenly it's like, oh my God, I've just thought of a brilliant, you know, new creative idea for you know, either music or something else that I'm working on.
Yeah.
And I woke up in the middle of the night the other day and literally wrote two sets of lyrics for two different songs.
Great.
And I don't know whether that's partly because, you know, during my daytime my mind's been wandering more, and then my brain sorted some stuff in my sleep and just went, boom.
Oh, look, I think that's exactly it. to be, I suppose, to be creative, you need to be prepared to be bored, I suppose, or to have periods of time where nothing much happens except that you're just contemplating things.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. But it creates the space in which creativity can flourish. And I suppose another thing with screen culture and smartphones and all of that is no one wants to be, well, not bored, but no one wants to experience what they would call dead time, I suppose. Or they would look at periods of, you know, mm-hmm. sitting there in a doctor's surgery, and there's only so much of, you know, five-year-old magazines that you can read.
Yeah.
You know, they would look at that as dead time. I mean, how many people, and I ask you, Simon, and I ask the audience out there, I mean, how many times have you, you know, said to yourself, right, I'm going to read a book, and you start reading, and then all of a sudden you start feeling guilty about reading a book because that time could have been used doing something else. I mean, that happens to me.
For me, it's writing songs.
Yeah.
Like playing guitar and just sitting down and messing about. Not doing anything specific. I'm not like specifically working on a song or learning a cover or whatever I'm doing.
Yeah.
Or rehearsing for a show.
Yeah.
When I'm just sitting there messing around my guitar, waiting for something to appear.
Yeah.
I kind of go, oh, I probably should be doing something else. And I mean, yeah, that's just, you know, thinking, oh, hang on, this isn't quite paying the bills yet, I probably should be focusing on that. But, yeah, there is that kind of guilt complex. I was going to say the guy that wrote the book, one of the things in this book, the Stolen Focus one, is exactly kind of what you were saying. He said he was basically saying, sitting on a train watching a guy, and I'm like working on my laptop or whatever, and I'm watching a guy going, what is he doing? Why is he sitting there wasting all this time? He's just staring out the window. I mean, this guy's obviously like, because I love that, you know. I mean, yeah. I probably don't do it enough, but, you know, I remember, it was probably 10 years ago now. I had to go to Melbourne. My dad was in hospital, and from where I was staying to the hospital was a tram ride and then a train ride.
Yeah.
Just because I was staying with some friends. And I just, most of the time, just sit there and, you know, literally stare out the window. And I always find it fascinating kind of just watching all the buildings that back onto the train tracks.
Yeah.
You know, I just love it. Like it's just, but there were days when I would be on my phone because I was kind of communicating with people back home, and then I'd kind of actually get to the hospital and kind of go, I missed that opportunity to actually do that.
Yeah.
Could have done this while I'm sitting here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
That staring out the window. I remember as a kid, I used to love, used to travel back to the country. So I grew up in the country and I went to school for the last 2 years in the city. And so every weekend I'd catch the bus into town, into the city from the school. And then I'd get on a bus that went out to the country.
Yeah.
And I always remember just sitting there with my eyes shut, and you get the kind of red glow and you can see all the trees going past through the kind of that kind of red flashing past.
Yeah.
And I just used to love that.
Yeah.
Sitting kind of in the sunshine, just watching the trees flick past.
Yeah.
I could just sit there for hours doing that. Like, it just, it was, I don't know, it was just, again, it was that kind of dead space. And I can't imagine.
Well, it's only dead space if people look at it that way. I mean, really, it's.
Oh, it was,
know,
just.
It's a moment in which you're just, you know, taking time out and reflecting, meditating.
Yeah, I guess I meant dead space as in not that kind of, just that continuous influx of information.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine that there's too many kids around now who've experienced that, who've probably sat on a bus, you know, or even in a car, you know, on a family trip, you know, like basically facing out the window and watching these trees flick past on a country road.
Yeah.
Because they were too busy playing on a phone.
Yeah.
I mean, that's having a huge kind of obviously effect on the creativity, I think, as a whole.
Yeah.
But I think that creativity breeds creativity.
Yeah.
So I think that the more creative you are in one space, the more creative you become in other spaces. So, for me, I mean, I think as a kid I was always a bit creative. I remember I lived on a farm away from other kids, so I'd have to play games by myself. So those kind of, you know, things, a kid playing in a room by themselves.
Yeah.
You know, I did plenty of that. In terms of the more kind of artistic creative stuff, I mean, music kind of came first, and then I did a bit of graphic design stuff.
Yeah.
It was actually originally to kind of support my music, designing a website, and somebody said, yeah, you're pretty good at that. You should do a bit more of that. So I started doing more of it. But, yeah, I think, you know, creative ideas, the more you have in one space, it's like, you know, no secret if you followed on social media that like I designed a ring that's going to come out next month, actually.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, one bit of creativity can spark other areas of creativity.
Yeah. It's almost like it's contagious, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think if you give your brain space to just, and also you don't limit yourself.
Yeah.
You don't sit there thinking I'm not creative. And you talk to a lot of people who say I'm not creative, and it's like, I think it's just been bred out of you, because when you were a kid, you were probably creative.
Mm.
You probably played little games to yourself. And I think, yeah, as I said, it's just like, you know, it can be in the simplest things, in the way you decorate your house, those kind of things. It can be, you know, cooking and, you know, there's got to be other. I mean, people who have a garden, you know, not necessarily a kind of veggie garden, I guess, but more like if they have like a, you know, flowers and trees and they lay it out.
Yeah.
There's an element of creativity in that. You know, they may not kind of, some of them may not feel it.
Oh, but even with a veggie garden, I mean, you know, I'm sure there's creative elements in anything that that anyone does, and I think the more someone is perceived as creative, I think they're also perceived of knowing more of themselves, because for you to have the confidence to put mismatched coloured cushions on a couch, but still think that's the way to go, that's creative. That's, you know, confidence. That's knowing yourself. And the more you know yourself, the more creative you are, because the more confidence to go through life beating your own drum, driving your own bus, you know, wearing your own clothes, whatever. It forms this loop. And I think creativity is not just something that is needing to have an end result, and especially a financial end result. I mean, it'd be nice, but creativity is just a means unto itself. It's just a way of someone expressing themselves against a world that is expressing itself in another way. And I don't think creativity is on a spectrum either. It's like, I don't think, I mean, if you're looking at output, and if you're looking at sort of the end results of things, I mean, you could probably come to the conclusion that, you know, someone is more creative than somebody else. But I think the way that creativity is expressed in an individual is wholly and solely dependent on how they've been raised and how they've grown up and the experiences that they had. The sum total of everything makes who you are now, and also the creativity that you express in yourself follows, I suppose. And, you know, whether that is more process-driven and you're looking for the spaces in between to be creative, like that's what I consider myself. You know, I mean, I'm very much sort of process and a ritual driven person, but there's always those spaces in between that you can, you know, have sort of flourishes of expression within that. And so that's why in terms of writing songs, for instance, you know, some people will just wait for inspiration to come before they write a song. And then I'm on the other end of the scale. It's like, I'll just write a song about anything just to get what's in my head and what my heart out. And whether it's good or bad, it's irrelevant. You know, it's just that's there, you know. And especially, you know, when people, if someone sort of presents a lyric to me and says, I'll put music to that, it's like that. I love that sort of stuff, you know, because it sort of gets my brain firing in different ways. So, you know, in that space, I mean, I'm more than happy to get out of my own way and just play around with ideas. And yet in other areas, it's like I'm the type of person that reads the instruction manual for things.
Yeah.
When it comes to, you know, when it comes to cooking, you know, I've got some things that I cook and all that sort of stuff, but it's like, you know, if I want more adventurous stuff, I'll come over here or go to a restaurant or something like that. But, I mean, I don't look at everything as purely functional, but, you know, I tend to store up my expressions in, you know, certain fields, and music is definitely one of them.
Yeah. I mean, I think with anything, confidence builds confidence.
Yeah.
So, you know, just thinking about the kind of, say, the cooking side of things, it's like, you know, you start being a little bit creative and you go, oh, that worked. And then you kind of, it's one of those things that evolves over time. You know, the more you do it, you probably get more and more confident with it. I'm not particularly confident with cooking, but sometimes I cook stuff and it's like, man, it's not too bad.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, but
you haven't died.
No.
You haven't poisoned yourself or anything like that.
Because I don't feel kind of hugely confident in it.
Sure.
I keep on, you know, marrying or being involved in relationships with people who are quite good in the kitchen, which doesn't necessarily help. It's a bit like my other halves in my various relationships across my life probably weren't going to sing to me.
Mm.
They probably could to a reasonable level, but they wouldn't.
Yeah.
Because to them, singing was intimidating because I'm good at it. Right. And the vice, they probably don't see that to me cooking is intimidating because they're good at it.
Yeah.
And they go, but you just do it. And it's like, yeah, well, same thing, sing. Yeah,
that's right.
And it's like there's no judgment here.
Hmm.
But in the same way they feel that, I feel that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you were saying it's not a spectrum. What I think is that, you know, some things that aren't – there are some things that are, like, massively creative where you just go, oh, my God, like, what are they doing there? Like, that's amazing. It doesn't necessarily, you know – make that something, you know, like you might hear a song or see a piece of art or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
You might go, yeah, I don't want to listen to that every day or see that every day. But this piece of thing over here that's, you might say, less creative, not less, it might be just as skillful.
Yeah.
So let's look at a sculptor. Yeah. You might have somebody who's sculpted something that looks exactly like a dog. And you go, I really like that. Looks like a dog.
Yeah.
And over here there's somebody who's made something that's a dog sculpture, but it's made out of like really weird random shit. Mm-hmm. And you go, it looks like a dog. And you might go, I think I'd probably prefer the one that actually looks like a dog in my house. I'm impressed by the level of creativity that is. That is out there.
Yeah.
But it doesn't necessarily. So I think there is probably levels of where you can look at something and go, Jesus Christ, that is that person's smoking some weed or something. But it doesn't necessarily, because there's levels of taste. Some people are going to go, you might go, that is so creative. And somebody will go, that is shit.
Mm.
And so there's still going to be, personal taste in what people like. So you could find a song and say, check this song out, it's really creative. And somebody goes, I don't really like it.
Mm.
But you're looking at it from a different perspective.
Yeah.
I think there was an example I think I gave we were chatting at some stage. Perspective is an interesting thing. If you're holding up I'm trying to think of an object, but a rectangular, block.
Yeah.
If you're looking at it from the side, it's a rectangular block. If you're looking at it from the end, it's a square block.
Yes.
And one person says it's a square and the other person says, no, it's not, it's a rectangle. And perspective.
Yeah.
And so looking at art, I think there is a spectrum of the level of maybe creativity, but there's a level of skill that is incorporated in there potentially in some creative fields that's different. So like there's a level of cooking might be a good example. Like you can have stuff that's really creative in a restaurant where it's like that really fancy stuff and you go, wow, look at that, that's amazing. Like they've just spent so much time making this thing look pretty and it also tastes good. And then there's somebody who's made something that's, doesn't look as spectacular but still tastes really good. And so and the person who's made the thing that doesn't look very, they've still had to get the level of, spice and all these things perfect.
I suppose it's the difference between a perfectly made pavlova and a perfectly made eaten mess, which is just a smashed pavlova. Yeah,
exactly. Had both of them at Christmas time too.
That's right. Oh, that'd be nice. But, as you're saying that, maybe I'll retract the spectrum comment because, if I compare myself to, say, someone like Amanda Palmer, for instance, I'm Greg from Accounts compared to her.
But
But
I mean, you were looking at it, I think when you were talking spectrum, also, you were saying bad versus good if something's more creative, is more creative better than...
Is someone more creative than somebody else? And I suppose the amount of energy to create is relatively the same, but if you have someone that has grown up in a more reserved household as opposed to someone who hasn't, it would be, they would be more flamboyant and the creativity of someone who's reserved would be very, very different to the flamboyant one. But the amount of energy to create that, I imagine, would be relatively the same. It's just the output is different because the person doing it.
Yeah. I thought of an interesting example, which was I think we've spoken about it in a podcast at some point, and we had Stuart Derrieta on last season or maybe
last one season. Yeah.
Yeah, he tells a story because he does a show called My Leonard Cohen, and he tells a story. Sorry to use this story, Stuart, but Leonard Cohen worked on Hallelujah for like a couple of years, and there's lots and lots of verses. There's heaps of verses. I'm not sure how many, but lots. And, you'll hear different versions of the song. It's not that they've changed the words. They've chosen different verses from the full set. And Leonard Cohen was catching up with Bob Dylan, and this is as Stuart tells it, a real scenario that happened. They were catching up for coffee, and Leonard Cohen's basically saying to Bob Dylan, he goes, "Oh, I've been working on this song for 18 months, just working on all the verses and stuff like that." He says to Bob Dylan, "Have you been working on anything?" And he pulls a piece of paper out of his pocket and he says, "I wrote this in the cab on the way over."
Yeah.
And you go, "Okay," and you think about that and you go, "Okay, tell me." You may have a preference for the musical style, but you kind of go, I don't think there's any doubting that both of them are, top tier poetic songwriters.
Yeah, it's just it manifests in different ways.
And you can't say that one is less creative than the other. It's just like...
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, in the same way that there's... You can judge yourself against people who you look at who've been successful in a field and go, people will look at them and go, they're more creative than I am or they're better than I am. And it's just like, not necessarily.
Yeah.
They've had an opportunity, it's come together for them. And, you know, that's not a comparison, you know, anyone needs to make. And even analysing your own process, I mean, I'm same as you were saying before. I mean, if somebody gave me a set of lyrics and said, could you write some music to it, it's like I'd kind of read the lyrics and start thinking of melodies and start messing around and, you know, it'd be an interesting thing to do. And I haven't done a lot of that. And then sometimes I can sit down and go, okay, I want to try to write a song about something. And I've done that before. But a lot of the time I just wait for kind of creativity to kind of, you know, wake me up in the middle of the night and start writing down words.
Yeah.
And who knows where that comes from. But it's probably a bit more obvious, or when you're doing it for a living, when you're doing a creative process for a living, these kind of ideas. But I'm sure, you know, using again the cooking example, I'm sure there's been people who've been, you know, cooking a meal and went, oh, you know what I'm going to throw in this? And they go to the fridge and grab something out, or they go to the cupboard and get some spice or whatever it might be and chuck that in and go, oh, yep, that's done it. And that
might
that,
put some salt and pepper on the chicken.
There's a running joke in my house that I never put anything on. I like salt and pepper on chicken, just simple, you know. But my wife's always like, so before we met, when you cooked, you didn't put anything? You didn't think to put anything? It's just like, I didn't know what I was doing. I was like, look, the stuff tastes good. You know, each of these things tastes good. I'll put them together, they'll still taste good. But it's not understanding how to kind of use those things to unlock flavours. But let's not get into
no.
Simon's a shit cook.
No.
But it is that kind of thing where you can kind of, you know, that is the kind of creative discovery. You know,
yeah.
It can be as simple as the fact you kind of go, you know, that you are cooking something and you throw something else in and you go, wow, that really unlocks the flavour.
Yeah.
And suddenly you go, what about if I add a bit of this? And you go, oh, no, hang on, that was bad. You know, you're going to have those things as well. A bit like, you know, where you were saying about writing songs, you get it, sometimes it comes out good, sometimes it comes out bad, I just get it out of my head.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you've got that creative process, sometimes it's going to go off the rails and you go, no, that's not good. You know, you're going to put the cushions on the couch and you go, yeah, that doesn't work.
Yeah.
You're going to write a song and you go, yeah, that hasn't quite turned out. I'll bench that one for a while and I'll come back to it maybe.
Yeah.
And you're going to cook a meal that tastes like shit, you know, just to use the examples we've kind of been using.
Yeah.
But that's all part of the creative process is
trial and error.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And I suppose, you know, talking about AI, for instance,
Sorry, podcast. I just hit the table.
An artificial intelligence sort of model is a self-learning model that's based on input that's put into it. I suppose creativity is the means of us as human beings assessing a situation with all the input that we have and experience and what we have learnt. And for us to be able to add one extra ingredient to it that hasn't existed.
Distill it down into something new kind of thing and just add our own flavour to it.
And I suppose it's a measure of our own sentience, essentially, because I suppose it can be argued that, because we express ourselves in a creative manner and because we have imaginations and because we can see ourselves outside of ourselves, we are sentient, as opposed to, say, other animals. I don't know. But I mean, some people would say that other animals are. Some people say that animals don't, you know. But in terms of using creativity and imagination, I mean, it's the thing that separates us from everything else as human beings.
Yeah.
You know, in a general sense. So why are we trying so hard to dismantle that in humanity? You know, surely it would be better off if, yes, you know, we do have the technology that propels us into the future, but the ethics and the creativity and the imagination of what it means to be human is shaping that technology moving forward rather than the other way around.
Yeah. I mean, I think, yeah, I mean, you can look at it and go, I mean, I think we spoke about we were talking about creativity in another podcast, you know, like we've got all these technology creations,
yeah,
you know, that have been created by creative people. You know, I think we've got great tools, you know, that can help with that creative process.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think Steve Jobs was alive, he'd probably rail a lot about social media and how much attention it sucks and how much distraction it creates, because, you know, I think he's really was trying to create tools that people could be creative with.
Yes.
And what people have done is added, you know, services on top of that, which are sucking away, you know, or distracting us from, you know, what's going on.
Yeah.
But I guess we were talking about defining it. I guess have we kind of just defined it in that kind of in kind of what you've said, in the sense of it, you know, it's taking all the things that, you know, whatever the kind of medium might be.
Yeah.
It's taking all the input and things like that, and then, you know, doing something slightly new with it. Mm. And yeah, I mean, I think that the thing that at the end of the day, if you're out there, audience, is don't think you're not creative. You are creative in something. You have the ability to be creative in something. And I think, you know, not talking, you know, like a lot of things, people talk to themselves. They have a lot of negative talk.
Yeah.
I think we had a conversation about it, and I was saying, you know, like just that kind of thing, that saying, which is,
would you talk to a friend the way that you talk to yourself?
Yeah, if I talk to you the way you talk to you, would we be friends? And the answer is usually no.
Yeah.
And it's the same sort of thing.
Yeah.
Don't talk to yourself like that. You know, like you've got the ability to be creative. Mm. Now, that's not saying that you're going to be, you might be in music and you might want to be a songwriter. Great. You know, you might be the next person who comes along who you know, launches into the stratosphere. Exactly.
Yeah.
But creativity doesn't have to be on that scale to be really enjoyable, and it doesn't have to be a business. It doesn't have to be anything like that. Yeah. It can just, I think, add to your life. And
it's just a way of life. It's even more ingrained than that. I think to not have some sort of creativity in terms of the way that you look at the world, move within the world, and perceive the world and whatever around you, you're not living. It's as part of you as breathing.
Yeah.
Basically.
Oh. Now we've got vibrations going on.
Vibrating phone. Suspected spam. Okay.
Suspected spam. My phone just doesn't.
I have some suspected mystery meat calling me.
Yes.
Yes. My apologies for that. I thought I'd switched it off, but obviously I hadn't. But that's okay.
That's all right. I didn't bring my hammer to smash it like that.
No.
Just whip out a massive hammer and just go.
That's right. That'd be the creative way to do it. No, yes. I just turned it off. It's breathing is part of life. Well, then, you know, imagination and creativity is also part of that. And, it doesn't have to have an outcome. It's just a way of being.
Yeah. And I think the thing is that I guarantee you, you've been in a meeting at work and you've said, what if we do it this way?
Mm.
That was creative. It may not have felt creative because you think of creative as art.
Yeah.
But creativity is everywhere. But, you know, I mean, I think that, you know, letting your mind go, having that free space to just let your mind wander is a great place to start if you're interested in being more creative.
Yeah.
Is try to, you know, switch the phone off, get away from it for a bit, get away from your laptop, your iPad, all those things. Get away from even putting music on. If you go for a walk, mm-hmm. you know, just listen to the environment around you. I've started doing that, and it's a great way just to, you know, potentially, you know, find some creativity within yourself. So if you're out there listening, let us know. If you see these podcasts posted across social media, you can comment with ways you are creative or ways you'd like to be more creative.
Yeah.
You know, let us know. We'd love to hear. And, you've been listening to the Soul Trader podcast for another week.
Fantastic.
And,
Thank you. Thank you, listeners, for indulging us this week. I thought it would just be good to have a good old natter about the very thing which sort of cements our existence. And, because part of the podcast is, you know, what is it? Music, creativity, and other plans.
Exactly.
So we've spoken about music. We've spoken about other plans. We haven't really spoken just nuts and bolts about creativity. I don't know if we've answered any questions, but who cares? You know, it's the journey, isn't it? And this was exactly. A bit of a journey today, which is good. And Charlie, you have been a very, very good boy. He's been sleeping underneath the table, and I'm very happy about that.
Mostly undetected.
Undetected, much, yeah.
All right, well, thanks for listening, and I guess we'll catch you next week.
Absolutely. Ciao for now.
See ya.
Been listening to the Soul Trader podcast, music, creativity, and other plans with your hosts, Simon James Betts and Corey.